Here we are again, guys, back at it for another episode of the Brew Chat Podcast. We've got a pretty great episode for you. I don't know if you guys noticed, we missed last week. We were just, it was American Craft Beer Week. Shit got a little bit ahead of us, but if you didn't notice, we were still putting out content and stuff. We were putting out a brewery video every day. So if you, if you're just a podcast listener or a podcast subscriber, you don't actually visit the website that much or follow us on social media or any of that, you may not know, but we spent all, I don't know, probably since January filming all these little mini documentaries with a bunch of the breweries here in town. And we launched them last week, American Craft Beer Week. Yes, go get beers, go watch documentaries. I had a fun time doing that though. It was a little bit of a hefty project. I don't really know why we thought to do it. We were just sort of thinking like, hey, we're some beer media guys here in town. Like, we felt like we kind of needed to have these little documentaries to tell people about the great beer here in town. Some of my highlights, let's see here. We'll do a little quick recap before we get into the episode here. Some of the highlights I had from it was, McHale's. They had a pepper tincture that they used to spice up some of their beers. They use it in all their food, or at least most of their food. I imagine they, you know, they're changing their menu up there from time to time, so I imagine there's something they're cranking out that they can't put that tincture in. But I tried it just on the end of a knife, and yeah, that is, that's where it puts you. Yeah, my gums were bleeding after that. It was not good. But yeah, we've got a video of that actually, so go check that on the website. We also, another one of my highlights is, you know, as always, it's a pleasure to get down to Heaven and Ale. But we went down to Heaven and Ale and talked with Joe. He walked us through some of their juicy IPAs. Had a great time down there filming. Had a great time filming at CBC. They were one of our first ones we did, and we filmed a ton of content with them, so much so that you all actually only saw about half of it. I'll probably end up putting out some more of the content that we filmed. I mean, all in all, that's kind of the rule of thumb when you film, is at least myself, I always end up with way more photos, way more videos than I'm ever going to use, and you guys see maybe a third of those. So I've always got extra stuff I'll put out at a later date, and we've got some blooper reels and stuff we're working on too, but it's been a fun week. All that to say, if I'm saying anything, sorry we didn't have an episode last week. We were a little bit tied up with American Craft Beer Week, but we did have some time to record some podcast episodes, so even though we were out, you're going to get 3 episodes of the podcast this week. You're getting 2 today, and then you're getting 1 on Thursday as per usual. And I think Bridget Martin, the local comic, is coming on this week, and she's got some tasty beers for us. Before we get into the episode, I want to remind you guys, make sure you get down to Riverside Wine and Spirits this weekend, Friday, 4 to 6, as usual. You know the drill. Get down there 4 to 6 on Fridays for their Growler promo. I can't remember who's going to be down there this week, but it's usually some tasty beer. And if it's not, the rep's there. So just tell him it's not tasty beer. Hurt his feelings. Make him feel bad. Make him regret his decision to be a rep for said shitty brewery. Also, on Saturday, they've got a wine tasting 4 to 6. Same time, same place, but on Saturday. So slightly different time. Get down there Saturday, taste some wine. Get down there Friday, taste some beer. Get you a growler filled. Also, get down to Once a Month Comedy, which is coming up, I believe, this coming Saturday. I think so. I may have my dates wrong on that, but I'm pretty sure it's this coming Saturday after this episode comes out. Get down there and see that. Funny ladies down there. Hilarious good times. Also, check out Brew Chat at brewchat.com, at Brew Chat with 2 T's across all social media. That's YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn, that bullshit. Whatever you want to find us on, we're there. Subscribe to our podcast feed, subscribe to us on the website, subscribe to us on social media, and you can also find us on the Hopped Up Network at thehoppedupnetwork.com, along with a lot of other great beer podcasts. That's all I've got to say. This episode, we've got Chris Arndt and our good buddy Brian Bender back on the show. They are both from the Barley Mob, and we actually recorded this since it was Craft Beer Week. We recorded it out at Heaven and Ale in Ootlewah. So forgive the audio a little bit. It's usually not our pristine, clean thing we got going. It's back to some of the OG days of the Brew Chat Podcast, but that's because we filmed it outside. And but yeah, bear in there. If you don't like it, then just go listen to the next episode. But come back and listen to it, because they've got some good things to say. We've got some great, great stuff lined up. I can't remember... You know what? Just listen to the episode. I don't want to spoil anything for you. Listen to the episode, then come back and listen to the next one, because you got 2 episodes today. So I'm going to quit babbling. I think this is episode 140 of the Brew Chat Podcast, so let's call it that, and let's get into it.
commissioning ceremony and then it's pre-graduation.
Yeah.
So the boy's like, eh, don't come sit up here in the heat, just watch it on the iPad. So we sat there drinking beer.
Nice.
Oh, nice.
Watching on the street meeting and got great, great photoshops, including this one from...
God, that just soaked me.
As they're marching in, his girlfriend's mom's like, oh, there he is.
Nice.
That looks like a fake finger.
No, it's real. Wow.
Yeah, this audio should do us pretty good. We've discovered how to clean up audio immensely and discovered this magical microphone.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it works out all right.
Like, if I point at you, though, are we good? Like,
yeah, okay. We should be good. It's just kind of collecting a whole field of audio through a very narrow lens right here. So, I guess I'll do the intro here. We are here for episode 140 of the Brew Chat Podcast. We're here with Chris and Brian. It's Chris Art?
Yes.
Art? Yeah. I want to make sure I pronounce that correctly. But yeah, we're down here at Heaven and Ale, Cambridge Square in Ottawa. We just finished a Barley Mob meeting. Now we're recording an episode. We've got a couple Orpheus beers and then a couple beers from Heaven and Ale here. So,
do you guys have a preference of which ones you want to try first?
Yeah, apparently.
We can work our way to the heavier.
Yeah, let's
start
finish
with the lighter ones.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we got a double IPA, we'll say that.
Yeah, that's probably bring dry up the
rear. Dry hop sour. Let's start with the plum since you guys have had it before.
All right.
This is the Atalanta. These are all Orpheus themed. It's pretty cool.
What? Apparently, these got ripped out of our distribution market a little bit ago with some change ups.
I don't have beverage war on these.
Yeah, they do. I was going to say, I'm not sure I remembered them being in our market here.
They were there for a brief moment, and then October rolled around. And we've not seen them for a bit, but there was some mess up at Riverside where they ended up getting some. So there's all these at Riverside right now. There's some, I don't know if it's a mess up or what happened, but.
I like that watch. You got all sorts of stuff going on.
Oh, man, it's a Garmin Evo fit.
Okay. I got my Samsung Galaxy something two. Note 2? No. That's a different one. Gear S2.
This is, I like these. They're great. Actually all are waterproof.
Nice.
You can swim with them.
Yeah.
See, this flavor text here says, in Heroin Atalanta, we see the traits of what we aim for in all of our beers. Piquant? This is a word I don't know.
Piquant?
Piquant? What does that word mean? I've never heard that word.
Like spicy, like a bite, like a...
Hmm.
Yeah.
So...
A little stabby back.
Yeah,
spicy.
Yeah, there's like a sauce piquant.
Yeah.
Okay. I've heard that.
Yeah. Or like picante.
Well, that's a little different, I think.
It's kind of...
But anyway, yeah. Piquant, deceptively robust, and a bit wild. A tart plum saison, Atalanta tastes of plums, intermingling with spicy yeast and a refreshing tartness that makes Atalanta as good for pairing with food as by itself.
Kind of bland.
I guess it's tart.
Atalanta tart plum saison.
There's a little bit of a tart at
you
the very
some,
end.
Like plum flavor, and it's just like, yeah, a little tart, and it's just kind of, but then it's just gone. It's just, there and gone.
A lot of the flavor, really.
That's what it is. Super bready.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It does, right, almost even after the finish, because it kind of lingers in there. You get a little tartness.
Yeah.
Got a little bit of farmhouse effect, too. Not a ton.
Farmhouse effect.
Yeah, I mean, I can smell the plum. I can taste a little bit. It's not like super aggressive.
Plum. This is kind of along the books with weed. We had 6 in here, and we drank 2 of them before we came out here because we just didn't want to. I wanted to be able to talk about a Heaven and Ale beer while we're out here. So we tried 2. It was an IPA, and then it was a.
Another saison.
It was a citrus saison, or something like a lemon saison, maybe. And both kind of like this one, there's not really anything I hate about it, but it's not
special.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot special going on.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not sure how much saison.
Yeah,
there is here.
No,
yeah.
This is what 5.? 2-ish.
They don't get like the typical. It's not. It's, you get a little tartness in finish. It's not that super dry. Not a whole lot of peppery phenolic character.
Yeah, just kind of.
I mean, the like, malt almost reminded me more of like a Berliner Weiss too. That kind of weedy, weedy readiness. Ready.
Yeah, I get a nice bread out of it. I don't get any saison.
I get some plum flavor.
There's some plum in there.
There is for sure.
But yeah, no. No, I'm just. If you had, it's the same like you're saying with the others. Like it's just disappointing almost. Like.
Yeah, quite, it's just. It's not bad, but it's.
I'd rather it, you know, like I would probably say with 90% of the beers I have, I'd rather have just had it without the plum. And I think it would be closer to just kind of a straight Berliner Weiss, and I'd be quite happy with that.
Yeah. I postulated that maybe our, when we were drinking these earlier, now maybe not so much, but when we were drinking these earlier, I postulated that just from Chattabrooga this past weekend, maybe our taste buds were fried, but...
That was my impression of this beer, but I had it before.
Just kind of
amped. Just kind of amped.
It's good. It's not...
Fresh as shit?
No,
it is. Yeah. No, I checked the dates.
No off flavors or anything. It's just not quite a saison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't know. They say pair with any food. I don't know. Maybe sushi, but... I don't know how well that food would... Or that beer would pair with food.
Yeah. What's next on the docket?
Next one, I want to go.
I'm done with that.
I've been really looking forward to less and less, actually. When I first looked at this six pack, I wanted this white grape sour. But the more of these that I've tried, I've been sort of less and less looking forward to it. So it's called Plants Have No Memories, White Grape Sour Ale by Orpheus. Gnarly and twisted, the old grapevines keep coming back, oblivious to the scars of brutal winds, rocky soil, and the annual fall into darkness. Every year, when the plants could look back and decide not to suffer through it again, they instead began their yearly fight for life like it's the first time. The Gewurztraminer grapes in plants have no memories. Oh, in Plants Have No Memories, this beer, are the fruit of this struggle. Don't look back. Artwork by Trey Mosley.
It's poetic, but doesn't tell us a whole lot about it.
No, that's not a whole lot of standard flavor text, though. As I say, it needs to try to get there, but it's basically just bullshit.
They told us there's a bigger German grape in the beer.
Yeah. Yeah, right, that's it. Well, although that's really all you need for wine. It's like, it's a Shiraz. That's the kind of grapes we use to make it.
Well, you also know where those grapes tend to be grown, how long they've been in a cask. And...
Speaking of, this smells kind of like wine.
Yes.
Artwork by Trey Mosley.
What I was expecting. Yep.
Thanks, Trey Mosley. Yeah, not what I was expecting.
No, it's exactly what I was expecting. Yeah. Yeah, very white winey.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's got almost that little kind of sweet Gewurz and whatever.
If you don't like mimosas, you can do a decent mimosa with that. If for some reason you don't like
Gewurztraminer,
you can tolerate that.
That's a fairly sweet German wine, and this has some reminiscence of that.
Yeah, a little dry, but still kind of...
You could serve that to somebody that doesn't like beer, and they would probably like this.
Oh, yeah.
Like wine.
Oh, definitely.
It's 6.5% alcohol, too, which is heftier than
all that. I would not have guessed that either, because it's pretty light-bodied. Yeah. And
I'd have guessed, you know, maybe half that.
Come on, Jared.
I know, I'm sorry. My phone, not silenced. It's bad.
Fairly, especially for a description as a sour, fairly mild acidity.
Yeah.
I mean, this one's nice and dry, much more so than the Saison, which should be dry like this.
Oddly, this one's maybe my favorite that we've tasted.
This is, I think this is like a preference beer. Like, you know, if you know, you're a wine drinker, kind of like Chris said, if you, you know, this, I could see a lot of people really liking this.
Oh, yeah.
I'm kind of indifferent towards it, but I'm not a huge white wine guy either. I think it's pretty good.
It gives me the...
Wouldn't be the one I would choose.
No. The face tingles a little bit like champagne does.
Like wine or champagne. Not quite as bubbly as champagne.
Oh, no.
But
it's well made. There's no flaws, all flavors.
Yeah. And half the ABV of one, at least.
This is the one I have hopes for, is the dry hop sour.
So the serpent that bite.
Most breweries that make that is usually pretty good. I've liked most of them that I've had.
Yeah, the artwork is really
combination I enjoy.
The fateful serpent bite was the catalyst for Orpheus's epic journey to recover his beloved Eurydice, who was taken, this is not here, but she was taken hostage by
God of the Underworld.
Yeah, Hades. God of the Underworld. Yeah, Hades, Pluto, whoever you want to call him. We take inspiration from his devotion and our love of hops and sour beers. Serpent Bite is a dry hop sour with a pleasantly tart bite. All right. 6%. They all have, like, a little liar on the can.
Little liar?
Yeah. Not like Alan is a liar, but like this
Greek liar, L-Y-R-E.
Yeah, it's a stringed instrument.
Oh,
which
okay.
Which Orpheus played on his journey into the underworld.
There's a symphony about it. Or sonata.
I think there's just some abandoned soldiers there. Yeah. It's so sad. Right?
Look at that one. That one's full.
It's full. Yeah.
A lot of them are full.
Alcohol abuse
is right.
Shit. Moldy grass that a rabbit has pissed in shit in.
That's pretty much the aroma.
Yeah.
That's the taste isn't bad.
Yeah, no, but it's
really different. It tastes
like, I mean, what I'm thinking when I see dry hop sour, just from what we've had in distribution, was like that Finn that people out of Cincinnati were making that aren't around here anymore. Is that Urban Artifact? Is that who it was?
Yeah, the Urban Artifact Finn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that wasn't like a mind-blowing beer, but man, that was a solid, super refreshing, you know, but it wasn't just sour. It had a little hop, but it wasn't that bitter hop. It just was a really nice... you know, like, whereas this one has a lot of clash, you know, whereas this one really kind of clashed, that one was, you know, the flavors and the aromas all kind of complemented each other and blended nicely.
Well, there's the dry hop clashes with the acidity and sourness.
Yeah, I don't need any more of that.
I don't mind it. The way I would like it would be on a Saturday or Sunday afternoon, with some fruit thrown into it.
To cut the smell?
Well, like, yeah, just make a big batch of some punch or something with it.
And turn it into a sangria.
Yeah, beer turn sangria. It into a sangria or something, but...
That flavor's not what I'm looking for.
Yeah, that's
way.
A lot of effort for, you know, to try and make your craft beer taste good.
Well, I don't think it tastes bad or smells
no,
bad.
No, it doesn't taste
bad. I would add that to it.
I do think it smells bad.
It's just kind of kind of how I've been on all of them. Just kind
like
of
it's really, if I was writing a sheet, I would use off-putting as like, you know, a description of like my reaction to it.
Because you said like a pissy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Would you write that in a sheet, Chris?
I get a...
there's probably some Simcoe-esque hop in there, which can have a cat urine-y.
Yeah.
We've recently learned that. We tried to get pretty... Yeah.
And it's got the grassy notes that from that maybe an extended dry hop, overextended
like,
dry hop.
It seems like they chose the wrong sort of hops to dry hop
with.
Yeah, they did.
Like, with like Centennial...
And they perhaps left it in too long.
Something regular.
Or some kind of one of the newer tropical fruity hops.
Yeah, Centennial would have been fine. That would have been grapefruity and citrusy. And
Nelson Savine might have worked.
Well, that one would have rolled right in with the grape one. I'm not sure there aren't some in there.
Even a Galaxy with that lychee. Kind
of. I was going to say Galaxy would probably be pretty good in here.
But whatever's in there, the combination does not work.
No. All right, well, so we got one left.
Moving on.
Do we want to do predictions for this last one?
What is it? Is that the dry hop
this
one?
This is the Deepa. This is a double India Pale Ale. Transmigration of Souls.
I think I've had this beer before.
Inspired by the Orphic Bone Tablets, which explore the dichotomous nature of life and death Our Bone Tablet series reveals the many sides of the IPA. Transmigration of Souls is an irresponsibly hopped double IPA, bursting with life from an absurd amount of aromatic hops. You'll experience a bouquet of orange, lemon, and tropical fruit sitting on top of a clean, dry malt body, 10%.
Okay.
We'll see.
That hop descriptor sounds like that would have worked better than what they did use in Serpent Bite.
Maybe they used them all in that one. I seem
to remember Orpheus being better than this.
Me too.
When they were in our market for a break. It's kind of disappointing. Like, to the point I kind of feel bad about how excited I was when I was at Riverside Wine and Spirits earlier today.
We're getting pretty good.
Okay.
Smells like an IPA.
I just realized the underside of their umbrellas here are hops, and that's a nice touch.
Oh yeah, that's a nice touch. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Definitely got the lemon. Definitely got some tropical fruit.
I'm getting some pine out of it too.
Yeah.
Some resiny.
I'm not mad at this beer. It's thick, but smooth and kind of silky, but...
I like this one. This one shows up like it knows what to do. These really have confidence issues.
It shows up like it knows what to do.
Yeah.
And it hangs around like it owns the place.
Yeah. This is good. I like this.
Compared to the other five in this sampler six-pack you brought, this is
pretty good. I don't know. It's pretty damn good. But, I mean, all of these were fairly low. They were all like 5%, 4%. This was the highest.
This is
10%.
Not. It's not hiding its 10%.
No, it's definitely not.
It's up front.
It's strong. Mm-hmm.
But maybe that's where they shine, because I thought these other three just could have used a little bit of something.
Mm-hmm. But
step up to the plate a little bit.
Well, in order to cause souls to transmigrate, I think you need quite a bit of power, and I think that's what this is sort of throwing at you. Maybe? Sounds poetic enough.
It's a big beer.
It's a big beer.
And so we got the malt in there.
Yeah.
It's pretty firmly bitter.
It's still pretty light-bodied, though, which is, I think, why that kind of the booziness is really coming through there, because it's not hidden by some of that maltiness, but on the other hand, they also made it pretty dry, I think, because of that, which I can appreciate.
There's no lingering sweetness in this.
Yeah, I mean, this is probably the best of the four, but this isn't
definitely the best of the four.
This isn't a wheelhouse style for me either.
Yeah, even the best of the six. We got all six and drank two before we came over here. I'm kind of glad we did that and didn't waste some time with that.
But, yeah. I will say, I think the grape one is good.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
It's just a matter of your personal taste on that.
I bet you could find people out there that are like, that's my favorite beer, or like if they tried it at a festival or something, like, oh, it was amazing, it blew my mind sort of thing. But I will definitely give it some credit.
Those flavors blend well together, too, in the plant had no memories.
Yeah. No, I would call this like an inverse gateway beer, because we have gateway beers that are like people who don't like beer, don't like drinking.
Well, it's just a different gate.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
It's not reversed.
It's from the wine.
From the wine. Yeah, if you like wine, especially white wine, you will like Plants Have No Memories. So,
and is that available at Riverside Beverage?
Yeah, Riverside Wine Spirits has this right now. And I don't know how long it's going to be there. I don't know if they're going to continue getting Orpheus stuff, but apparently they're... I don't know. He was very elusive in telling me about it.
And
It's the one in the light yellowish-green can.
If somebody really is a white wine drinker and likes a branch of the beer, they should head down to Riverside, too.
They definitely should.
Yeah. No, Riverside's great. They do have good wine.
This guy gets it.
Yeah. You know how it works. You know how the system works.
He's heard the show. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
No, what do you guys think? Because this reminds me of Chattabrugo, which is this past weekend. I would have put this. We got those pineapples down there.
I would have put those
pineapples. But what do you guys think of Chattabrugo this past weekend?
I think Chattabrugo is the best beer festival.
Yeah.
You know, in Chattanooga. Brew Scott is another good one, too, which is quickly coming up.
It's kind of different, though, you know. Yeah. It's got a different focus.
Vibe and focus, but, you know, yeah, you. I like a beer festival where they're catering people that want to taste a lot of different styles and kinds of beer.
Yeah.
In a small portion, you're not committing to pay for a 16-ounce pour.
Yeah.
You get, you know, a 4-ounce pour. And,
yeah.
And if you don't like it, you can get something else.
Exactly. That was one of the problems with Southern Brewers Fest, too.
Yes.
And this past year, they were doing, like, they only did full pours or something like that. You can do a half pour. And
well,
was...
the people pouring at Southern Brewers Fest just assume people are there to get
wasted,
you know, fucked up and wasted and enjoy the music, which some of them are.
The music is very good.
Yeah. So it's there. So, but it's like...
Doesn't really matter at this point, does it?
Yep, yeah. Nope.
Yeah, it does not. It does not.
But Chattabrooga does a good job of getting a good collection of different breweries.
That's a good balance.
There that, you know, they bring in some stuff that you don't normally see in the market. Like they had the Pantheon Creek on tap there, which is something you don't ever see. And just, they could find a better weekend other than the Saturday before Mother's Day.
Yeah.
They'd probably sell it out if they did the Saturday before Father's Day.
Yeah, they really would, yeah. No, I've always wondered that. I don't even know why they initially started.
I think it's because, and we were talking about this before, I think it's because this, just so everyone knows, is American Craft Beer Week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the Saturday before American Craft Beer Week happens to be the day before Mother's Day. Every year.
Yes. They should move American Craft Beer Week.
I don't know if Rhizome Productions had that much forethought.
No, because
I don't think
it's not like Rhizome only puts this on in Chattanooga.
They may have another festival.
The problem is, as far as where they're doing festivals, we are probably the smallest, I would guess.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Probably both population base and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So we're, the, you know, where you get the least amount of difference.
Yeah. One, I do... this year, I do. It was the best year. This was our fourth year as Brew Chat, sort of being down there and covering it and doing all that. It was the best.
I've been there every year. I haven't missed it yet.
Yeah, this was a good festival this year. They had rearranged the layout a little bit, instead of having everybody on the outside.
I did too. Actually, I agree. That worked out better.
It was way better.
The vendors back to back, and we kind of have an hall full of people.
And they produce like a guide.
Every now and then.
Where there's like people coming in and like, I want to go taste this, and where do I go to taste
it? Great.
No, they had some graphic design intern throw up some PDF of some sort of a guide that worked that was pretty decent, actually.
Close enough.
Yeah.
It's close enough to what people had on draft.
And then the layout, though, it's one of those things that was such a simple change that should have been made so long ago.
Sometimes those things, you know, stare you in the face until you know, have that eureka moment.
There was an airflow issue I noticed this year. It was like, they're all in the middle and it doesn't have all this blocked off. With everybody, you've got more room for everybody.
Even though it was hot, it was comfortable underneath the pavilion.
There was a nice breeze constantly, just a good airflow going.
My only pictures from Jenna Berger of that, so, you know.
I started here, and I moved here.
It doesn't matter that.
Now my ass groove looks like it's like...
dried it off for the next person.
I played bass for ass groove in high school.
but Chattabrooga this year... It just, the fact that they, I don't know, it's just a simple move that they should have made 4 years ago. It just...
I mean, like I say, I've been to every year. I've always felt like it was at least the beer festival I enjoyed the most.
Yeah.
Just to reiterate what Chris was saying, I want to go and taste beers.
Yeah.
I want to taste a lot of different beers. I can't do that if I'm getting a half of a shake or pint or a mug or whatever. Or if I can, I'll crawl out of there. And if I'm crawling out of there, that means many people are doing it. And then we're in a really unpleasant situation.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy the fact that it's in the middle of the day. You know, it's run noon to 5, 1 to 5, depending on which ticket you get. Mm-hmm. So it tends to not be a big drunk fest. It tends to be people that are more interested in having a good time trying some beers, but not just going to get shitty, watching a band or something. So.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that for me. Ditched the band.
Yeah. The DJ is good, and they.
The DJ's
he
good.
Was killing it.
Yeah, and he was doing having a great job. Time. Yeah. was no, I thought the DJ is a great addition.
It's fine. That was last year too. They just had the DJ. Yeah. I had no problem with that.
Gets some background. It's not overpowering conversation. And
yeah, the first year, I mean, I covered it 1 year as Brew Chat, and then we like really sort of officially, whatever you want to call that, covered it the next year.
Yeah.
And they had a band.
Oh my heavy God, metal band.
It wasn't a heavy metal band.
It was 1 year.
It was like two. Guys that were doing like some folksy stuff, and it just they had it right in the middle, this little menial stage that was no wider than this patio.
Tanner, and Chris and I know exactly where it was because there is a long Chattanooga tradition of any beer festival that has a stage, the Barley Mob is placed directly next to or in front of it. So we are very familiar with where the stage was.
Yeah, it was just
and who was on it.
Yes.
Yeah, it was no bueno. And
it's lame.
Last year was the first year that I remember them actually being like, fuck it, with the bands, we're getting a DJ. And they just get a DJ that plays some top hits, like remixes the top hits.
From the 80s, 90s,
that's the way you gotta
today.
Go, yeah. From the 80s, 90s, and today.
And he was loving it.
Yeah, he was having a good time.
Yeah, he was grooving. 5 hours, this dude just rocking back and forth, just grabbing his headphones. Someone bring him a plate
pretending
of food
to turn knobs and flip switches.
Yeah, he didn't do shit. He just picked different songs on Spotify.
I'm still convinced DJs just are pretending to.
It's a lot harder on the lips to be good at it. If you want to be Daft Punk.
Well, I don't know what they're doing. I don't know what they're doing. That's the problem. Anyway, but no, it was an overall good festival. Yeah. It just
and they also managed to get a lot of like people from the actual breweries come in.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Not all of them, but a lot of the booze had either the brewer or somebody that works in the brewery there to talk about the beer and the brewery, which is always nice.
Yeah. So what was beer highlights for people?
Oh, shit.
Well, actually,
oh, that's good.
I have some of my beer highlight.
Oh, my. Okay.
This I believe it's going to be mine.
The Black Abbey Highwire collaboration, the single smash, the Saws smash beer.
Is that the Pilsner?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I had some of that. That was good. Everybody was raving about it.
That was my favorite thing there. Well, it was one of my favorites there. It's wonderful.
See the tap there.
This is great. This growler, by the way.
It was a Christmas gift from my
in-laws. Yeah, this is pretty fantastic.
It's got Comet's tits a little. It's a little rowdy. It's excited. It's got a delicious beer inside.
What do you?
So it's understandable.
There we go.
Pour the beer.
And my CO2. Not dead in there.
I don't know when I've stopped. There we go. Okay.
You did a nice job there.
That's good. I don't want more than just a little snit anyway.
New
doodad in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was one of my favorite beers, though. It's more of a Czech style pils to me than a German pils, which is kind of generally what you'll see the craft beer makers anyway tend to stick more to the German, which are a little bit more bitter, a little more aggressive a lot of times. This thing, it's just pillowy soft.
It is really
malt is super soft, has that soft water, just it almost like melts in your mouth, man. It's just tremendous.
It really is. I was kind of when I was smelling it when you were telling me that, and then I tried it.
You got all that
it's
nice,
amazingly soft.
Noble Saws hop in there, some pepper notes and
it's really great.
It's a difficult beer to make. There's nowhere to hide.
Absolutely.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah. It's not. Now, I don't usually prefer a Pilsner, but especially on a hot day like this weekend Saturday, this was great. I was drinking sours all day. And this was really great.
Yeah, I kept going back to that one because it was a hot day. I didn't want to overextend myself.
Yeah, yeah, right. You got to plan ahead for days like that. There's a lot of beer to drink.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, no, I mean, I thought it was cool that there were a couple, like, heavy beers there, but people weren't bringing their barrel-aged all over the place, aside from Dynamic. But, you know, that's all they do.
Yes.
Barrel and sours.
I thought I could make it, but I gotta go piss.
Well,
you just keep carrying it, though.
Yeah, no, I'll carry it.
Yeah, I'll say not for lack of choices with them, at least.
Yeah, God.
They had something for everybody.
They had just beers that were just, they had a giant list.
Yeah.
And Matt was just crossing shit off the list.
Those guys are special.
Yes.
yeah, that's something else.
And that was that would be another highlight of mine, which always has been, is they make a what are they? I guess they're just calling it a golden sour now. They used to kind of call it a goose, but it's a version. They call it their Exaltation. That is just a fantastic beer. I absolutely love it to death. So probably about 7%, I think, sour. It's just really lovely. I'm a huge fan of it. So I was glad to get a taste of that.
Yes. I believe that a version of it won Best of Show. I forget about it last year.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, we've judged that, I think, at several different Best of Shows. That
it does quite well in every competition it's ever been in.
Really excellent. We had that. We had some... Well, I think you and I were over there with the, getting into the old ales too, and some, you know, 11% old ales blended from 2014 and et cetera, et cetera. So all sorts of nonsense from those guys, and I say nonsense in the most
way possible.
With the most admiration I can.
Oh, those guys and their nonsense.
Yeah, they are tremendous.
Yeah, that's great. No, this is a really good beer, this Pilsner, because, I don't know, I don't really like Pilsners, and like I was saying, you could drink it all over that day, but it's, like you were saying, peppery, it's not something, Pilsners are a beer that I think are overlooked a lot, a beer style that is overlooked a lot, because, I mean, it's just like, okay, you got your Budweiser, you got your Coors Light, and all that stuff, they're just like weak-ass Pilsners.
Well, those are Pilsners in, like, a different way, too. There's an alternate description of Pilsner, which basically just means, like, American premium beer.
Yeah.
Where it's,
domestic, air quotes, that people with, call
so
it.
It's, yeah. Those aren't, I mean, those are a style all their own. They're not Pilsners, really.
Yeah.
But Pilsner does have some range and some subtlety, like we're talking about. This is a Czech, you know, or a Bohemian. Versus a German, you know, there's...
A Czech Pilsner, I
there's
tend
quite
to
a
like
bit of difference.
More, it's got, like you were saying, that peppery taste. And it's,
the German can be a lot more aggressively bitter. And the Czech Pilsner is a lot more balanced. And to me, when it gets into spring, nothing says spring like a good Pilsner.
Yeah.
Or, God help you, can find it in Munich Helles. But that's few and far between there. But especially that's a fantastic beer.
What would be a Munich Helles you'd recommend? Because... one that we could get our hands on potentially.
Sometimes you'll get
Eisenflock.
You know, like the Hofbräu.
Is that real?
One.
Or you? Yeah.
Longhoff.
Paul Einer makes Munich. One if you can get it.
They're not very.
You can get them in bottles.
Yeah.
You know, but to get one on draft is pretty rare.
Yeah.
Maybe Brewhouse. I want to say I saw one at Brewhouse.
Brewhouse will get just crazy shit occasionally.
Yeah, they had
them.
Yeah.
I mean, most of them that I've had have been homebrews.
Yeah.
You know, truly, I've either judged or somebody has made or something. I'm sure I've had some commercial examples of it, but not many.
So what is...
Lakes set up, so Cleveland makes one that's pretty good.
Okay, yeah.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Cleveland, Ohio.
So what distinguishes a Munich Helles from like a regular another like Helles lager?
It's kind of you're stepping up from the Pilsner, so you're backing down the hoppiness and stepping up the malt. So it's just a beautifully malty beer. It's, you know, again, it's got the crispness, the lightness, but it's got just the gorgeous maltiness of a German Pilsner malt in there. You've got some hops to balance that, to keep it from being too sweet, but where the Pilsner's got more of the distinct hop character to it, the Helles is more of a distinctly a malty beer.
Yeah, like it wouldn't be nearly as hoppy as even this Pilsner that we just had, which is, you know, pretty soft in the hops. I mean, they're almost you almost want it to be imperceptible in there just to balance things out rather than taste the hops.
You don't want
to. They need to be there, but you don't necessarily, especially if you're giving it to somebody that isn't, you know, really tuned in on what it may be. You don't really want them to necessarily notice it. You want it to be, this is a malt focused beer, but it's not like a wee heavy or something like that that you think of like, well, this is malt focused because it's 9%. It's like big chewy malt.
Yeah.
A lot of times, a Munich Helles might be
4 or 5 percent.
Yeah, 4%. You know, so it's actually, again, it's a real, almost a trick of, you know, there a real bit of skill to make a super malt forward beer at 4%.
Yeah, yeah.
I could see how that would. I could also see how that would be a really fun beer to drink in springtime.
Oh, it's warmer weather, fantastic, yard, barbecue, just wonderful.
That all that good stuff. I know who is it? Yazoo. I think it's Yazoo. Does a Yazoo Helles.
I don't think I've had that one.
I haven't had it either.
I may be misspeaking. And
they might. They do a lot of beers. I haven't had it.
I'm trying to think which brewer it is.
So many brewers.
I want to say it's a Y. It's Yazoo or Yellowtail or Yellowhammer.
I'm hoping, you know, coming down the road that when Wanderlinger gets up, I've had Mike Dial made one for an event I was at. Ooh, yeah. That was wonderful. So much of that's like 4 to 5 can. Mm-hmm. I don't know that any of that is. I don't think I'm talking out of school, but I also don't know that any of it's accurate.
Yeah, I don't know. He puts up very sparse pictures, so I don't know actually.
I assume, and I've got my fingers crossed, and my assumption is that that's just because he's busy right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, hopefully.
That's my hope.
I hope that's the case, that he's just busy and not able to get down there and sometimes. Because I remember last year they had some good beers. I can't remember what they had, but I just remember them.
Yeah. No, he's doing good. What I've tried has been excellent. Like I say, when he wheeled out that Helles, I'm like, oh, now we're talking.
Yeah. So let's talk about the Barley Mob for a second. What are you now? You're the president?
Yes.
President of the Barley Mob, and then I guess X.
I am nothing.
Yeah, you're nothing now, but you were the,
technically, XVP?
I volunteer my services to do the IT side of things for the Barley Mob, but I don't have an official. Nobody voted me into that. I just took that seat.
Yeah.
Because nobody else will do it.
Somebody's going to do it.
Somebody would. And you just seize power.
Yes, I seize the power because nobody else would.
Yeah. So what, I don't know, I'm assuming you've not been the president of the Barley Mob this whole time.
No, the Barley Mob started in early 90s. Brett Weber was the first president. Right at the same time, Big River was starting and opening up the Barley Mob. It's sometime in that same vicinity that the Barley Mob gets started. I was with them a little bit at the beginning and then kind of had young children and stopped brewing for a while. And when I got back into it, Tony Giannossi was president and started back brewing. And then Brad Lumley roped me into becoming the vice president. And when Brad left, then I got, you know, sort of.
It's generally how it works.
Yes,
yeah.
Made president by default.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So yeah, you've been. What are you? Your fourth year now?
Yes. Fifth. Actually, yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
So I did it for 4. God, that was stupid. I say all this in jest. I love the Barley Mob. I love the people. I just got busy with other things and it became taxing for me. I shouldn't talk. This way very jokingly.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm here at a meeting. I love this group.
It's hard to organize shit. You know, people. It's a thing.
In truth be told, and this isn't just me bullshitting, but, you know, I do think that it's good to have some turnover, especially in a club like this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think it's good to have some turnover and let everybody else have a shot, have some input in that. It just keeps the group fresh and keeps people interested. After a couple years, I'm not going to have any new ideas. I'm going to keep churning out the same stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to become routine, and everybody's going to get bored with that. So I actually think it's good to have some new blood come in and kind of livens it up for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or some of our own politics thought that way, you know? Because I 100% agree with you. That's
That's so that was part of it.
And then, I mean, we got enough folks that will pitch in and help out. Most of the things come together. The biggest amount of work is putting together the competition, which
forget about it.
Yes, that requires a tremendous amount of organizing and sorting and planning to, put that on and then judging.
Talking to different homebrew clubs and stuff in different states and having them send beer across state lines.
That part, that's the easy part,
that's
honestly.
That's the easy part?
There's a website.
It just does it all for us.
Well, we publicize it. It gets basically put on the here's all the homebrew competitions in the U.S. list, you know, in Zymergy or whatever. We put the site up and then, you know, people, we'll publicize it with, you know, kind of our Mid-South series, you know, our brothers and sisters here in, you know, Georgia, Alabama, you know, that sort of thing. And we'll advertise it that way, but we don't have to advertise a ton, really. It's really just the actual physical work.
Yeah. And recruiting judges is always a problem. And there's so many competitions now, it's hard to get judges to come. Mm. And so you end up taxing the club judges to an enormous degree, and you're, you know, people go, oh, judging beer, that's not hard. Well, it is when you have to do it seven nights in a row.
Exactly. 7 nights in a row, and we have to go to somebody's house to it, which means I've got to go to somebody's house, which means I can't judge. Like, look, if you give me,
IPA,
if you give me a couple hours, I can judge a lot of beers, but I can't drive home then.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
You know,
if we're not in our early 20s anymore. We can't just go out and just hang out,
You know, so it's like, that's the thing. So it gets really frustrating because you just kind of feel like you're chipping away. It's like, how many beers did you do tonight? We did 4. You know, out of 230, you just feel like you're not going there. But if you don't chip away at it, you'll never get it down. You know, it's a few weeks where we all get a little grouchy and grumpy and,
you're doing like wood aged beers, and some of them are 10, 12, 18%. You can't do that many in a night.
Yeah,
you know?
No, that's true. When's the cutoff? When do you know the cutoff of, like, you're drinking and you realize, like,
I can't do anymore.
I can't do anymore. It's fucking.
When your palate starts to go, you can kind of tell.
No, we've definitely been there.
Yeah. There's not been many episodes of this where we've gotten that drunk, but there's been a couple where Riverside just happened to send us like a 10, 11, and a 15 or something like that.
Okay, we weren't expecting this tonight.
Okay.
All we wanted were some porters. We didn't want to get
honestly, stupid. I'll speak for myself. Like, if I'm like consistently judging, I'm in good shape. Where I'll get into trouble is, okay, I'm finished with this thing. Oh, we're going to start the next one in 45 minutes. And then I, you know, wander in the kitchen, find a couple, you know, beers in the fridge and start drinking those or start drinking, you know, the leftovers or whatever. Because, you know, when you're judging, you're writing so much, you're kind of on your own pace where you're not really going to get sloppy.
Yeah, you're not drinking the whole beer.
The downtime is what's going to get you.
Yeah, I could totally see that. I could totally see that.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, it was even just me drinking in general. I mean, like at Chattabrooga this past weekend, if I keep a ball rolling, I'm good. But the minute that ball stopped rolling was when we got to CBC after. You saw me knock over a glass. Like, I don't do that shit normally. I don't. Like, I'm a class fellow. I got my shit together. But when I start to slow down,
you get sloppy.
I get super sloppy. Yeah, and I called an Uber.
You also were no longer drinking out of the 2 ounce sampler glasses. You were drinking out of a giant pineapple.
Yeah,
giant hollowed out pineapple.
Well, no, I was beyond the pineapple at that point. I was onto a full pint.
A pint.
That's one thing I've learned is you don't drink before or after the beer festival.
Mm-hmm.
You drink during the beer festival and stop.
See,
I've discovered I like a good primer beer, like a nice PBR or something beforehand.
Yeah, we
just
had
something
PBR
to
beforehand. Just get.
Well, normally when we get to the festival, we're having to set up all the jockey boxes and get the beer lined up. So we're
drinking
at the festival, but we have to sample the beers, make sure
everything works.
The jockey boxes are flowing properly, and we got the right amount of gas. So that's the primer.
Yeah,
right,
you do the same thing we do. It's built into your workflow.
I've learned
it's built into the workflow.
Yes. When the festival's over, that's a good sign to cease.
Oh no, we went over to CBC. I grabbed some of those cheese curds, which the last time I went to CBC, they were not that good. But they were really good cheese curds.
Yeah. No, they've turned their food around a lot here recently. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they turned their beer around, they turned their food around, and I'm pretty happy with it because it's walking distance from the office.
That's a good thing.
Yeah.
But, after that festival, I was exhausted that night. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't hear from you.
I sat on the couch and played God of War all day.
I just watched that OJ documentary all day.
What a lot of people did.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I also caught up on Westworld. That was good. Caught up on... have you watched Westworld?
I watched the first season. I haven't seen any of the second season.
It's
quite tasty.
I kept waiting for Yul Brynner to come out.
Right? I would love for Yul Brynner to show up. Well, he did show up in season one. He was in the background laying on a table. I was like, all right, I like that they put that in there. But
yeah, I don't want to be the one to tell you guys this, but I don't think he's showing up.
Well, he is, but
I hate to break this to you, but he is not available.
I don't even. If you
CGI,
if you
can say, put him in there.
Okay. Yeah.
They brought back Tarkin.
I just didn't want you guys to.
If you were to say though, the first Westworld movie was very much just like it was Jurassic Park. They go to the park. Western Robot Park, the robots go bad, they start killing people. And it's very just black and white.
There?
Well, this new show does such a crazy job of putting in weird aspects of literature and the bicameral mind.
But you know why Westworld is just like Jurassic Park, right?
Oh, I totally know. Michael Crichton.
Yeah.
I totally know that. I'm a huge Michael Crichton fan.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying with this new one, they've done such a crazy job of extrapolating the central idea that he had for AI and extrapolating that out to just...
Yeah, and they throw in some of the whole Blade Runner-esque, you know, what's the line between, you know, life and not life?
Yeah,
they get into that.
Like, are they human, or are they, like...
That's a big part of season two.
Yeah,
even, whole season like three, one, four episodes in.
HBO, when they got a new show, they got to put a lot of sex in it to
pull people in. Yeah.
And if there was a part with, like, lifelike robots...
Why
people
not?
Would be going there as much to shoot them as to screw them, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
That seems likely.
Yeah.
First one, then the other, maybe the other way around. You never know.
And this isn't really a spoiler, so for all you listening that haven't seen it, but in the second season, they introduced the fact that there's six parks, and one of them is like a 1920s British-occupied India, like Indiana Jones era, the Jungle Book era sort of thing. I'm like, man, that's where I would go.
They touch on
some samurai.
On the samurai.
They got a Shogun world. Yeah, it's crazy. What
I think Jurassic Park might be one of those. I'm with you because we've talked about this.
Why wouldn't they do a Jurassic Park?
I don't know why not. It's
robot
all,
world.
It's all
I mean, at that point,
the Crichton verse.
That's a lot of filament. To 3D print those dinosaurs.
But that's a safer option than having real fucking dinosaurs.
Well, sure. Look how it's working out in Westworld.
Yeah.
That's true. That's true.
A lot of whatever.
I don't know, but it's like still slightly safer, I think.
Okay. Well, you know.
To have animatronics.
Well,
you think AI is safer than
bringing back
dinosaurs?
You send me a postcard from Jurassic Park, Tanner. Well, I ain't going.
Not to really spoiler stuff, but I mean, there's a part where she's like, oh yeah, I know, I helped you out, but I just turned off all your like pain sensors and stuff like that. Like he can walk around, you can shoot him, he's essentially a zombie, except a zombie that can think.
Yeah.
And is, instead of trying to eat your brain, trying to escape the matrix and get into the real world, which is kind of terrifying.
I don't know, new season
it's
brings
neat.
In stuff about trying to revive dead people.
Westworld's good.
Yeah, no,
it's good.
I will say it sits underneath. It's the second show I watch for my Sunday night shows after Into the Badlands, though, which is my favorite. Currently running batshit crazy. Don't think about it too hard, but Jesus, this show is fun.
Yes. Yeah,
I started watching
one.
The Expanse.
Because
you were
break my heart.
You were telling me some shit about how that's a good show.
Not so much anymore.
Turned it on when
canceled this week.
That's what they do though. Good show.
Yeah.
That is true.
That you had said so much shit about it, I turned it on one night and I turned it off because I was like, ooh, I'm really digging this. I need to not be where I'm at right now.
Distracted.
Yeah, I need to not be where I'm at right now, working on shit and have a couple beers and whatnot, because this show looks really good. Like, I was really impressed.
It's outstanding.
Yeah. And I love sci-fi.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love sci-fi. That's my jam. Like, just hard sci-fi. I've still not watched the new Lost in Space remake on Netflix for the same reason. Because I want to give it its due.
Yeah,
I love sci-fi.
That's an easy one. I watched all. That's an easy one. Like, watch the pilot. If you like it, keep watching. If you don't, don't watch anymore.
Yeah. Because you'll get more of the same.
Well, yeah, what it is kind of what it is.
Yeah.
They're lost in space. There's a robot.
It's more like tone and that sort of thing. Like, if it works for you, it worked for me enough. Like, I watched them all and was like, but expectations weren't super high either because, I mean,
it's lost in space.
That's exactly right.
Right, yeah.
I've watched the original Lost in Space. I watched that shitty movie in the 90s.
I have as well.
I wanted to like it.
Yeah, I didn't see the shitty movie. I saw some of the series.
It's real bad.
It's not great.
Yeah. It's real bad.
I've seen better.
So yes, but yes, I highly endorse Into the Badlands if you want to go back and catch up on that.
Yeah, no. It's what, three seasons now?
I think we might be in four now?
That's what I felt about Vikings, too, because I love season one of Vikings, but now they're in season five or six.
Stuff happens so fast in it that it's actually hard to... Because I can't be like, well, this happened in season one, this happened in season two. Like, you know, it's just a breakneck pace. Yeah. So I honestly am not totally sure what season it is.
Breaking Bad gets like that at times, too. There's a bunch of stuff that they shove into every 40-something minutes.
That's why I had a hard time with Breaking Bad.
There's a lot to it.
Shit got way more hardcore. It was like a relationship moving faster than I could handle it. It was just, I'm not ready for this yet. Like, I want to get to know this situation before it gets ruined. And I couldn't handle Breaking Bad. That's why I never finished watching Breaking Bad.
See, I didn't actually... I wasn't genuinely all in until season four.
I was sold on
that's what I keep hearing.
I kind of hate watched the first three.
Yeah, that's like, what I kind of hear.
There's
from
compelling
people.
Things in it, but there's other things that I just can't stand. And then really, on the other hand, like Better Call Saul is that's one of my favorite shows. I think that is that show is just excellent, so well done. I think it's because he figured out, you know, that world. That he's now he's got the world built, he's got it figured out.
Yeah.
So, you know, Vince Gilligan's knocking it out now, but
it's kind of slow moving though. Better Call Saul, I feel like it's slow moving.
It's not for everybody, you know, it's definitely not Breaking Bad. It's a very different show, but I think it's I like it better. I'm not saying it's a better show. I like it better.
Yeah. I need to catch up on that. I saw season two, so I need to get in on season three.
I don't know, I tried to watch, when I really gave my old college try for Breaking Bad, and I learned something with Breaking Bad, was I can't try to watch new shows when I'm hungover. It affects the whole
thing. I got you.
That seems like good advice for most things.
Yeah. I don't know, but that's the show that I learned that with, is just, I don't know, you would think, oh, I just want to lay here all day and just absorb.
That's a little heavy for a hungover day.
That's like, you watch mindless action flicks.
Yeah.
Wrestling or something.
Or Beastmaster. Ultimate Beastmaster is such great mindless, it's just mindless visual vomit is all it is. It's just it's Ninja Warrior.
Yeah.
I'm not familiar with the old eight movie from
the 80s. I'm like, are we talking about Mark Singer and ferrets?
No.
This is, because I didn't watch this until Jared
showed it. Was it Sheena, Queen of the Jungle?
The only reason it's called Beastmaster is because the course. Ultimate Beastmaster is because the course is laid out like a dragon or whatever.
Produced by Sylvester Stallone.
I thought it was like,
yeah, some kind of wild hogs you gotta wrestle, you know, or
yeah, that's what I thought.
Beat an alligator or something like that. If you're gonna
that's what I thought. It's
American Ninja Warrior, produced by Sylvester Stallone and co-hosted by Terry Crews in season one.
It sounds like season two kind of a takeoff
on
Stone Cold Steve Austin's gauntlet thing he used to do.
What is that show called?
Not all of it, but some of it.
It's the Broken Skull.
Yeah, well, the Broken Skull Challenge.
I was an idiot.
Tay Diggs? It's not Tay Diggs.
No, it's not Tay Diggs.
It's what's...
Now you're just being racist, man.
No.
If you're replacing Tay Diggs with Terry Crews...
No, Terry Crews is season one.
That's the white guy that earlier was talking about how he wanted to go to British colonized 1920s Indiana, accusing someone else of being racist. I'll just point out.
No, it's for the adventure, not for the racism.
No, we got it, Tanner. Everybody's clear on what's happening. Everybody's clear.
No, I'll figure it out.
Either way, it's a good show. It's basically just people trying to get through a stupid obstacle course.
If I'm going to watch that, I'm going to watch wrestling, so.
Yeah, fair enough.
I've got plenty of wrestling to watch.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, we need to wrap this up. By the time I'm done with this wrap-up, I'm assuming you're going to have knowledge.
I will have the host.
Some kind of knowledge.
Yeah, anyway. He's going to have something.
Season 2 of The Ultimate Beastmaster, Tiki Barber. Tiki Barber.
There we go.
Is season 2 host. Yeah. Along with Chris DiStefano.
Chris DiStefano.
Or maybe,
he's a comedian.
Or maybe they slipped Rondé in there and you didn't notice.
No.
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 There's no way. That's impossible.
Season 1 is Terry Crews and Carissa Thompson. There is a season 3, but I don't know who's going to be hosting yet. We'll see what happens.
They get Hulk Hogan.
Maybe.
Yeah. They haven't quite, I don't think America's ready to wrap their arms back around the Hulkster quite yet.
He's got a big lawsuit to
But he did nothing wrong.
Yeah, right. Oh, no, he got paid on the lawsuit.
Yeah, he's getting the coin.
Yeah, it was what they found out in discovery of the lawsuit problem for him.
Yeah. Which is why he got...
Yeah.
But we're going to wrap up here. I want to thank you, Chris. I want to thank you, Brian, for joining us out here. And whoever's listening, having an ale.
Yeah,
thank you for having us out here in Cambridge Square, Ootawa. If you've not been out here, get out here and check it out. It's a pretty easygoing place.
We got
and it smells like garlic bread.
Yeah.
Constantly. It's going to make you want garlic bread. I want nothing but. But anyway, this has been episode 140 of the Brew Chat Podcast. Yeah. I think we'll get there.
And remember, if you like the white wine like beer, get down to Riverside and get the... Plants have no memories.
Yes.
Pro here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's still Orpheus Brewing. Left, yeah, there's plenty of all these left. Cool. Luckily, most of them are pretty low grab, so yeah, we're going to finish them. And
all right.
Next time, Tanner's going
to
get...
I'm trying to get in here, but it's way too dark. All right, we're done. Until next time.